Working in her garden was how she centered herself during all different phases of her life. She learned so much because she had such an appreciation and awareness of everything that grew.
At Home with Growing Older is a nonprofit organization which believes in peer learning and creating discussions which bring the lens of aging to a variety of topics. At Home with Growing Older is proud to be your host of At Home on Air, a radio hour offering connection, community, and knowledge to our participants remotely. Now, we invite you to listen and learn from this live recorded episode of At Home on Air.
Welcome, everybody, to At Home on Air. I am Susie Stadler, the Executive Director of At Home with Growing Older and the producer of this podcast. At Home on Air is really a forum to explore the work it takes to be at home with growing older, but also the delight which comes with it. And these explorations are made possible through the insights of inspiring guests from the arts, architecture, construction, medicine, social services, and beyond. And of course, through comments and questions from you, our listeners. So thank you. We are very fortunate to welcome Lynn Elizabeth of the nonprofit publishing house New Village Press, who recently published Professor Claire Cooper Marcus's autobiography, Groundbreaking, My Unmapped Path as an Academic, Mother, and Gardener. Welcome, Lynn.
Hello, hello. I'm really delighted to be on your program, Susie. It's a great pleasure. And I love the vision that you have for your organization and the podcast. It means a lot to me. And I'm grateful to follow after Claire herself and Dr. Mindy Full of Love have been on your show. So it's an honor for me to participate. And thank you for inviting me to come and talk about Claire's book and the many ideas that we plan to address.
Thank you, Lynn, for these kind words. You are really also part of this group of groundbreakers. You're an innovator in your own right. And together in this conversation, we will reflect what it really meant, you know, for women especially, to forge an unmapped path as professionals in the 20th century, and what Claire's life and work continue to teach us. And that's why we also chose the title of today's conversation, Groundbreaking: The Unmapped Path of Women in the 20th Century and the Freedom They Claim in Older Age. Also a note, both Lynn and I were friends of Claire, and we miss her deeply. Claire passed away this January. This will be an undertone in this conversation that we really feel very close to her. We should start this conversation with the role of Claire's garden and also what choosing this title meant for both of you. And again, the title was Groundbreaking, My Unmapped Path as an Academic, Mother, and Gardener.
Yeah, so the double entendre of groundbreaking worked so well. And Claire was delighted to come up with that. There were other titles that were considered, and this was one that both of us felt excited by and comfortable with. And it just felt right for what she was putting together. It felt right for describing her life. And she was cautious about bragging about what she had done. Her work was very pioneering, but she didn't want to give herself that title. And yet there was the earthiness, the basic meaning of groundbreaking in terms of just, you know, digging and getting under things that I think made her comfortable with using it. And that was that was so important to her. I mean, working in her garden was how she centered herself during all different phases of her life. And it taught her as well as centered her. She learned so much because she had such an appreciation and awareness of everything that grew and the force of what was growing, and herself as an animal in the garden, participating in, the miracle of life.
Beautifully said, Lynn. Her garden was also an important space for you.
Your audience might not know that I lived as a roomer in Claire's house for a couple of years, and it was a point in my life when I was writing a book about earth-based construction, natural building methods that use earth and straw. I guess that connected with Claire's interest in ways that I hadn't really thought of till this moment. And at that particular time, I was living on an advance for the book. Claire and I were able to connect. She had confidence in taking me in as a writer with no job because she asked who my publisher was, and I said Wiley, and she said, "Oh, I'm publishing books with Wiley also." So then, she felt safe to have me rent a room from her. But anyway, during that period, I was living quite frugally on a modest advance, and she grew a lot of food in her garden, not just fabulous flowers. And there was more than one person could certainly eat. So I was welcome, invited to please enjoy the bounty of the garden. And I certainly did. And it was beautiful. I mean, not only was it physical sustenance, but there was an afternoon when I was standing in the scarlet runners that have beautiful red flowers. And there were two butterflies on my shoulder who were mating. And I remember thinking, life doesn't get better than this. This is too beautiful. Our garden was very, very special to me.
Yes, that's where you came up with the name of your publishing house, no?
It's true. It was in her garden that the name New Village came to me. I had been running a nonprofit called the EOS Institute for the Study of Sustainable Living, and I had moved then to Northern California, and I had been publishing a journal called Earthward that dealt with environmental issues. And then I wanted to address more social issues, and Claire was certainly an influence to that new perspective. It was really propitious that I ended up living there and having her influence. So the concept of New Village, I remember distinctly coming up with it in her garden and coming in from the garden and telling her I had a name for this new journal that I wanted to start, which eventually became book publishing, but it started as a periodical.
How amazing was this? And then you published
Yeah.
the last book. It's really full circle. She really was one of
Yes.
the first people who thought about how spaces shaped people, the relationship between spaces and people, which then became the field of environmental psychology. It was her amazing contribution for many people in housing projects, in public spaces, in prison gardens. She expanded her life. It was all about making spaces for people. Claire was a private person. She was British, formal, drinking tea in the afternoon and making tea for sure. But her book is very personal. And I wonder if this was surprising to you, if you can tell a little bit more how this was sort of a different side of Claire, which came out in this autobiography.
Clearly, a deeply personal side of Claire, and something that I have observed with authors who have retired and have set aside finally their professional responsibilities. Of course, Claire was continuing to research and author books on the healing power of gardens and the importance of gardens in healthcare facilities. She hadn't really ended her professional career, even though she was no longer teaching. But at the same time, she felt the freedom to dive into sides of her life that she would not have written about as a professor at the university. And so I find that, like other authors that I've worked with in this later stage of life, there is this freedom to go back and, look at what really shaped them. What were issues that they were personally grappling with, and then finding perhaps a commonality with other women their age, or simply people their age having similar experiences. I was, of course, thrilled and also surprised to hear many of the stories that are in her book that, despite many, many cups of tea and chats in the garden and so on, I still had missed so much of her life. It's a gift to everyone that she's recorded these stories, and she's a great storyteller. She comes by quite naturally. I really was grateful for the freedom that she gave herself to really uncover her motivations or her influences, this personal kind of exploration. And she was part of a memoir writing group. And I think there's a great benefit to joining a writing group, getting encouragement, feedback from one another. One of the women who was in the group came to her memorial and described how they encouraged Claire to talk about her professional accomplishments in her book, which I encouraged her to do as well, because she was modest. And I think she thought, well, people already know what I did professionally, and I don't want to be bragging about it. But she did astounding things that no one else had done. And I was glad that we encouraged her to write it down. And how did that come about? And what did that feel like? So that's in there too. And I'm grateful.
Thank you. And we all do astounding things, and we sometimes don't see them or recognize them. And she really came to a point where she recognized what she did. I wonder if there's one astounding thing which sort of floats up for you.
I loved her teaching method, which was very experiential. And I always had a deep interest in how people respond to their cities and the environments that they live in. She had her students go to, could be a public plaza, to go there and sit there the entire day. And maybe I'm exaggerating, but for hours, and to write down everything that they observed. And then they came back and they would share these things with each other. And they discovered, for instance, there was one situation where a woman was feeding pigeons, and then they figured out that she actually was surviving by catching pigeons and, taking them home to be her supper. So there were things that no one else was observing that were going on in the city that people's lives depended on. And so, to me, having the students pay attention to these things and not just learn them from a book. You could tell the students, well, it's important to have chairs that are facing one another, maybe at an oblique angle, so it's conducive to conversation. But if you observe during the day one kind of park that has seating like that, and see the conversations that happen, and then go to a place where all the chairs are facing outward and see that what a lonely place that is, you come away with a true understanding of what the difference is.
Yes, and that was sort of revolutionary, this kind of
Yeah, it wasn't commonly done, no.
Yes, so thank you for bringing this up. It made a difference in many projects and with many architects who were her students who carried this wisdom. I also want to link a little bit to this memoir writing group you mentioned, or just to memory writing in general, to telling your story. Claire says in her book that it's difficult to remember everything, what happened. But the letters she wrote to her parents and which she then kept actually helped her reconstruct her own life. I know that other authors you have published also views letters as the source of storytelling. I mean, we don't write letters anymore, or very rarely. How are we going to reconstruct our lives now without letters?
Well, people can keep journals. I have one author who was part of the women's art movement in New York City back in the 70s and 80s, and she had a habit of keeping journals. She could kind of remember things, but she pulled out her old journals and looked up particulars, and she said it was so helpful to actually know who said what and what difficult decisions they had to make as a group. It helped give her a sense of history and to feel confident in writing a story of that period of history, because she was pretty sure that this is, in fact, what happened. And another author, also who was in her 90s, had documents and could remember letters that she had drafted. Those are just invaluable, and they're not always available to all authors. Yes, I suppose if we develop a habit of keeping a journal, we probably have emails now. I sometimes send, quite detailed descriptions of, can be quotidian things, but just things that happen during my day to a friend here and a friend there. And I suppose I do have a record of events, although it's a little harder to find.
Yeah, no, it's true. It takes maybe setting up a new practice and really being aware of this sort of letter writing.
I think having a regular practice of reflection and writing about those reflections can be really helpful for personal growth. Just as, the times I go to a conference, if I make a promise that I'm going to write an article about it for a publication, not only do I take notes, but then I have to sit and reflect on what I heard and what my notes say in a different way. And I find that what I bring home is so much richer than what I would have done if I had just gone on my own and didn't have any assignment. Maybe we have to give ourselves assignments or support each other in doing that sort of thing.
Yes, absolutely. Coming back to building a practice, one thing which we both reflected together was sort of this practice of groundbreaking, of really mapping a new path in the 20th century. Women, their roles were not defined. Claire has many examples in her book about this. And, in a way, this was tough. But I also feel it was lucky. And I don't know if you would agree, because I feel like what I see in you, Claire, many other women, that you became very creative and fearless and took advantage of the fact that roles were not defined. And I feel that the same is true for older age. Roles are not defined in older age. It's an advantage. You have already done this. You can now continue inventing roles and mapping a path in older age because you have done it before. And I wonder if this resonates with you and if you can talk a little bit about yourself, but also about Claire, or also maybe your other authors where you see this. Especially for women, the unmapped path which they had to walk or define, and how does this now help them in older age?
Well, I think women very commonly have caretaking roles of one kind or another. In your younger years, you're taking care of your children, possibly, and nurturing a career at the same time. I certainly juggled those things, and Claire juggled those things, and there were many, many awkward aspects of it and difficult aspects of it. I mean, I personally feel that I probably gave my children a short shrift when I was focusing on my career. It can be kind of a joke in the family about, how inattentive I might have been because I was focused on my work. I think Claire had to deal with those things. And I think women are made to feel guilty because they are also considered the ones who are supposed to be responsible for the children. And then as we get older, it comes back again that we're considered the one supposed to be the caregiver for elderly parents or neighbors. It really is less common that the men in a family or even in just an apartment building are the ones taking care of each other. There's certainly many exceptions, but I think we're constantly navigating that balance, you know, still needing to carve out the time for the work that we feel is meaningful and where we feel that we're truly using our gifts and being able to give something toward a bigger purpose. But we're balancing that with, you know, getting someone to a doctor's appointment or helping someone deal with a computer that they don't really know how to work anymore. I had a neighbor in my apartment building who was so distraught. She said, "I can't use my phone anymore. It's too confusing for me, and I don't know what to do. Isn't there a simpler phone?" So then I would do some research for her on trying to find something that she can use. And these are constantly new problems for all of us, you know, for me trying to help her and for her, things that we take for granted for a while aren't tenable anymore. And we have to develop these workarounds. One of the themes for New Village is community building on the grassroots level. And I do deeply believe that. And that is an aspect of one's personal life, that tending to the community, because it is the community ultimately that supports us. We're constantly supporting each other in informal ways, especially now when the formal systems are being dismantled. We're more dependent than ever on the informal.
Yes, women are multitaskers throughout their life. Claire was writing her last book until the very last moment when I saw her in December, like a month before she passed. She was just proofreading footnotes. I feel like in her retirement, she had like this incredibly rich life. She's published many, many books. She really did intensive work on healing gardens, etc. That's also this rich life in older age, which she was lucky to live. And in terms of dealing with new challenges, I also remember that she got a very beautiful German bed in the last couple of months, which was tilting up and then rotating. So it allowed her to get up by herself during the night. And she was so super excited about it. She showed it to me and said, "Child, look at this incredibly cool bed." So that's also, you know, this very pragmatic approach to older age and to acknowledging the tools you need and embracing them. It's very rare that this happens, really. So I think that's part of the strength Claire was showing. Before we go to the audience comments or questions, I would like to land on the final passage in Claire's book. It's about what to carry forward and what to release. And I wonder if, do you feel like reading it?
Yeah, that's so beautiful. Turning the compost. Recently, I had a dream about compost. I'm cleaning out my car. There's lots of trash inside, which I organize into two bags, one for garbage, one for compost. When I've nearly finished, I find a woman is in the car waiting for a ride. "Oh, I'm not Lyft or Uber," I say, and she gets out. As I continue to clean, I find more people in the car, always women. Well, it seems I'm carrying around two kinds of stuff in my vehicle. Things I need to dispose of that don't serve me any longer, and things like the compost that could eventually be a medium for new growth. And when I do this, I retrieve lost parts of myself, like the women in the car. are these women, these parts of me in my car, seeking a ride to a new location? There's childhood me finding solace in nature. There is me in my 20s coming to America. There is young academic me starting a teaching career. There is the wife of Stephen, mother of Cooper and Lucy. But the one I recognize most is gardener me, because she connects us all. She has always been there and always will be. She is me from childhood in England to octogenarian living in Berkeley. Composting takes all the parts, mixes them together, and over time creates a medium for new healthy growth. The women blend and merge into someone I now recognize. I am happy to give her a ride.
Thank you for reading this.
When you get into your 70s and 80s and 90s, the previous lives you've lived, those previous selves do seem like strangers. You kind of marvel at them, and wonder, was that really me? It just seems, we often say another lifetime. It feels like another lifetime.
Yes, in the end, they all become one. The woman blend and merge into someone I now recognize. I'm happy to give her a ride. She welcomes all the selves.
She does. I will say that the authors that I work with have in common a strength that comes from a positive sense of, I can do this. I'm sure they have their moments, their days, their maybe even years of grave doubt, but the overriding sense of, I can do this. I will do this. I want to do this. It's important for me to do this, and I am doing this.
Yes.
Appreciate that in them. And what they do and have done inspires me to, bring their story to more people, because it's energizing.
Thank you so much for doing this, for bringing these stories.
It's a joy to do it. It
Okay.
really is, that pleasure of publishing.
Yeah. And I think you said at one point in one of our conversations that you became a publisher because you wanted to read stories, or how did you put it?
It was that I just felt compelled to share the story of something that someone had done, men and women. I was so impressed by what they had done, by something that they had transformed, for instance, in their neighborhood, that I thought was worth hearing, that gave me new ideas, gave
Thank
me joy,
you.
restoring joy. And Mindy Full of Love, who has been on your show, and we've published four of her books. One of hers is about restoring joy in places that are broken. And Lily Yeh talks about that also, bringing light, bringing joy, something good to something that's been fractured, broken, something that's suffering. Not even necessarily healing, but something that offers a brightness or a way to deal with pain from the past.
I mean, that's part of human nature, joy. So often forgotten that we need this in all phases of life.
Yeah, the book by Tamiki Hara, who actually survived the bombing of Hiroshima, in his book, he's looking for the joy in life and what's meaningful, despite the harrowing things he went through. That's what he's focused on. And then in the book Art Against Brutality, Claudia Bernardi is working with communities that have gone through serious trauma, if not genocide, and helping the survivors to express themselves through art. And she's clear to point out, we don't aim to heal what's been done. It's impossible, but we can give people a way to feel alive again and to bring meaning back into their lives.
Are these all older authors?
As a matter of fact, yeah, well, Tamiki Hara is no longer alive, but Sandy Walker, who provided the art in the book, which was the inspiration to publish it, is in his 80s. Claudia Bernardi is probably my age. I'm in my late 70s. I mean, not all my authors are elderly, but I would say that quite a large number of them are.
You are listening to At Home on Air. We are now switching to questions by participating audience members in this recorded live episode. If you want a chance to ask your question, visit us at athomewithgrowingolder.org and register for the next live episode.
Question from Gerald. Iona Dreaming was a memoir, correct? Her last book was an autobiography. She made a distinction between the two.
Yeah, I mean, Iona is from her experience on the island of Iona off the coast of Scotland, which she used to go regularly during the summer, and it was a really important retreat for her.
Gerald also continued later on with another question. I am eager to find out what I can learn about Claire beyond her previous books, but even more so, I'm curious about what writing this book, this autobiography, this groundbreaking meant to Claire. Because I know it took a long time. It was like 5 years in the making. No?
Oh, yeah. I think partly she wanted to have something to give her grandsons so that they would know her story. And so I can really relate to that as I realize in my older age that I never asked my grandmother or my mother about their motivations in life and the turning points in life and what was important to them. And I wish I had. Those relatives of mine did not write autobiographies. I wish they had. So I think it's a gift probably for her family, maybe especially for her grandsons. Claire was definitely, you know, a community-minded, community-oriented person. Her story, I think she hoped that it would have resonance for other people. And I've been hearing that it has. So one of my board members wrote to me just spontaneously and said, I finished Claire's book and, oh my gosh, she felt like it was, you know, partly her own story of what women went through in that time, juggling children and career, and when it was something new to do.
Yes, and they still do.
Yeah, they still do. They still do. I mean, I remember my father telling me when I had an interest in being an artist when I was young, and he said that in his generation, a woman made a choice between a career and a family. You did not do both. Now, he was aware that times were changing, but I was only one generation away from that, women having to make that choice or being told they had to.
Yes, I would love to know how young women read this book, Claire's biography, what it says to them. Gerald said, I get the sense that Claire was not afraid to follow her intuition and her own path, even unconventionally. Her practice of flying across the world to Iona, which is an island off Scotland, over and over again illustrates this, as well as the way she addressed her own cancer treatments. Seems she had a very strong inner compass. Yes.
Yeah. She survived multiple cancers, and I knew her during those times.
In terms of unconventional, Claire was in Berkeley when Berkeley was sparking during the 60s and 70s. And she certainly explored all the avenues also of, you know, spiritual journeys. This was just a special time she really took advantage of.
Yeah. I'm curious to know, because it seems like some of these people are regulars with At Home with Growing Older, some of the important takeaways from, you know, listening to people in this series. I'd like to hear from some of you about that.
Yeah, Susie, it's Diane Sanchez.
Hi, Diane.
Hi. You know, you can get all the practical things that we learn and that Susie's organization teaches. But at the heart of this is how you feel about yourself and how you see the world feels about you and how you deal with the way people project what they want to think about you because you're older or whatever, and how you manage that. Because you can have your house outfitted, you can have all sorts of things done, but if you don't do something about the inside, then you're not going to find the joy. These conversations really help get to the joy.
Thank you. Then Rachel put a comment in the chat. She said, I feel like what I learned from Claire is her steadfast stick-it-to-it-ness and her strength and unapologetic way she thought out of the box. She stuck to it, yeah.
What always blew me away is when I found out that Joanna Macy lived like next door to Claire. I mean, and I think they have sons the same age, but pretty amazing people.
Yeah, when I moved to Claire's, Joanna Macy had been a great influence in my life. And in fact, it was on my mind that I wanted to somehow reconnect with her. So I'll tell the anecdote that when I was living at Claire's and I was putting together this book on alternative construction, when I completed it, I declared, I am never going to write another book. Because it was such a monumental task. It was such hard work. And I think it's kind of ironic that I became a book publisher. I mean, I didn't know I was going to go into book publishing at that time in my life. And I'm so glad that I had that difficult experience because I understand what the authors are going through putting their books together. It truly is a monumental task. So, I'm kind of in awe of them. I think it's a lot easier to publish the books than to write them. So,
From Claire, I know also that you're a very collaborative publisher. That's probably also rooted in this experience.
even on the contracts, I remember when I was writing my contract with Wiley, and it was my first time having a book contract, and I did not have a lawyer. We couldn't look these things up in the internet the way we can now. So I, went to libraries and I read everything, trying to figure out what are intelligent things I should be requesting as an author. And I had all these demands, really trying to negotiate the best possible deal. I can remember all this crazy back and forth. And so that also gave me a deep appreciation of what you go through as an author when someone hands you this contract, which is a scary thing, all written in legalese. It was really good.
Learning experience and what questions you had and what you thought you would get. I think that's also part of the great thing of older age that you know more and more what questions to ask. That's how I feel sometimes. I know more and more what questions to ask, but I also feel more confident to ask questions. I was not as confident to ask questions in my youth, and that's just so important to ask questions. So thank you to all the women who continue to go the unmapped path and define it for themselves, and also to all the women who contribute to helping us map the path in older age. It's an adventure, we all know that. Thank you all for being here. Thank you, Lynn.
Thank you, Susie. This was really a great experience. I've really enjoyed getting to know you through this experience and these conversations, and I look forward to participating in more of your discussions. And I will invite people to participate for your next series because I want more people to benefit from
Yes.
these.
Also, a reminder, there is an amazing archive of conversations on our website, so take advantage of it and more people can listen to it. That's the beauty of it.
This episode of At Home On Air was produced by the At Home with Growing Older team. We could not host these conversations without the generosity of our marvelous and passionate guests and hosts. Thank you for sharing your personal and professional insights. Thank you to our live audience for your thoughtful contributions. To subscribe to this podcast and for more information, visit us at athomewithgrowingolder.org. At Home with Growing Older strives to educate, inspire, and connect people across generations and disciplines to re-envision and improve the experiences of later life. Don't forget to subscribe and tune in for the next episode.